Hey guys, this is actually part two of our Policing Our Own series. We started this last week with discussion of the Ahmaud Arbery and Kenneth Walker cases, and we did bring up the issue of armed protests, and then towards the end of what we thought was going to be one episode, we realized we were running a little bit long, and then with everything from Memorial Day this weekend to some genuinely terrible cases of seasonal allergies, we just decided to split it into two episodes by topic. So that's left us with a slightly shorter episode this week, but I hope you guys still enjoy it. Without any further ado, here comes the episode.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
We don't have government of the people, by the people, for the people. We have government of the people, by the bureaucrats, for the bureaucrats.
You don't have to be a Republican or a Democrat. You can be whatever you want to be. Just go and fight for your beliefs and be as independent as you can.
Okay, so you just mentioned referring to the armed protests, Michigan and elsewhere, basically calling for an end to the lockdown. People wearing body armor, people with loaded weapons, people with just open carrying weapons, essentially storming the Capitol and yelling. And there's been a lot of defense of these guys in conservative circles and libertarian circles. As I mentioned earlier, or by this point, it may be last episode, Justin Amash got crucified for calling them out and saying that it was a bad idea and that they shouldn't do that. And you compared that to terrorism by saying, you know, well, if other people try to use the threat of force to get what they want and they're not Americans, we call that terrorism. I'd also point out, by the way, that at least in the psychological definition or some psychological definitions, we are no more really agreed than lawyers are on the definition of vigilantism. But the threat of violence when you're not, you know, governmentally sponsored does fall under a lot of our definitions of vigilantism. You've been very harsh on this. A lot of people have been very harsh on this. And a lot of people, on the other hand, have just been very blindly pro this, the idea of armed protests. We even talked about the Virginia protests when they happened. And it seems there's something different here. So in the spirit of policing our own, how does the carrying of guns onto the Michigan State Capitol or the Kentucky State Capitol by these protesters against the lockdown differ from those persons of color who carried guns to defend a state representative?
Well, it differs from that, and it also differs from, you mentioned the Virginia protests that were protests regarding Second Amendment law. In Kentucky and Michigan, the anti-lockdown protesters, at least the general tone you got from them was the reason they were carrying guns was kind of to remind the legislators, hey, we're here, we're armed, you know, we could be violent if we wanted to, therefore end the lockdown or do whatever it is that we want you to do. The guns weren't part of the issue. They were used as an intimidation tool, which is why I'm making the comparison between them and terrorists. You are using violence or the threat of violence to intimidate your political opponent and try to achieve a political goal. That's pretty much the textbook definition of terrorism. On the other hand, I'll take the Virginia protests first. The Virginia protest was a bunch of people out carrying guns around the Virginia Capitol and not actually stepping onto Capitol grounds, because in Virginia that wouldn't be legal, to make the point of there's a lot more of us than you think, and we own firearms, and we'd like to continue owning firearms, and we can peacefully protest with them, because we are not all a bunch of hicks who just go blow up Tannerite in the desert and want another civil war. That was a demonstration, not intimidation, but demonstrating a point that a lot of your constituents are this kind of person. The gun-owning person isn't the stereotype some people have of an ignorant, uneducated redneck who just owns a lot of guns, and that's the end of the story. And then the second occurrence in Michigan, where it's just six individuals providing an armed escort to a legislator, that's a response to a credible threat. And that could have happened in response to any other kind of threat as well. Anytime a legislator would be threatened just by an anonymous threat letter, not even the presence of the other side with guns on Capitol grounds, that's a show of force saying you've threatened the person who represents us, you've tried to use intimidation and threat of violence to achieve your political ends. We're here both practically forming defense for this person in case you actually try that, and also making the point that you're not the only one with those capabilities and you aren't going to get away with what you're doing. there's a lot of subtlety here, but I do think that it's a distinction with a difference in both cases. These three groups were all using the carrying of weapons in a very different way. And you could flip all of the political causes around, and it would still be kind of the same thing of, what is your carrying of this weapon meant to do? In one case, it's practical. I would use this to defend this legislator who I've decided to protect the life of. Another case is just demonstrative. Hey, I'm a gun owner. I exist. I'm here and I vote. And in another case, it was kind of an open-ended or else.
So there's been a lot of criticism of that third option. Again, the COVID-related gun-toting protests. And I mean, we've both gone on the record earlier and on other episodes of the podcast just saying we don't like open carry. I'm not a fan, not my favorite thing. But a lot of people have been defending them as well. And basically saying, well, that, you know, Justin Amash got criticized, you know, oh, you must be anti-Second Amendment. And I've even had conversations with people where they say that's what the Second Amendment is for. Those legislators should be afraid of their gun-owning constituency as they keep trying to oppress us with these COVID lockdowns, etc. And it seems counterproductive, because the last time you were here, we talked about the conflict of rights. And if you don't exercise your rights properly, I'm not saying the oppression of your rights is a good thing, but it's going to happen, especially if you're in the minority. That's just a fact of life. And so to me, when you're carrying guns to the Capitol, supposedly to threaten your legislators, and you and people are defending you by saying, yeah, they should be afraid of their people, and quoting V for Vendetta and all this other crap, I don't like that.
Ooh, classic.
Yeah, I don't like that. I just really don't. I mean, at this point, I'm on the record for being a really bad libertarian. I may as well just call myself an independent at this point. But I don't like the idea that that we want to get political change via threat.
Yeah, that's not how the system is supposed to work. That's not how representative government works.
Yeah, and everyone loves to romanticize the American founding and say that's just what the spirit of what these people are carrying on, but to me, it's not.
It's not, because in the context of American founding, you didn't have representative government, and representative government was not working at all to represent the people that the laws applied to. The English Parliament knew who every law was going to apply to before they passed it, so they were able to be discriminatory. That is a totally different circumstance than the political system is working the same way it was 5 months ago in this country. And some people just don't like the outcomes. That's a different thing. And I'm not saying that we could never get to a point in this country where violent uprisings were morally warranted. I hope to God we don't, because I think that another problem with these people is they are not thinking through what that looks like and how terrible of a world that makes. Living in America in 1776 would not have been fun, and I wouldn't want to do it. It would be right up there with living in America in the South in 1865. Not a good time. Not on my list of things to do. That's not a world that these people want to live in. And part of my annoyance with them is I think it was an idle threat. I don't think they actually are prepared to carry out what they're implying they would carry out, which I guess is a good thing, but also just makes them look worse, in my view, my personal opinion of them. But that's something to keep in mind, is that revolutions are bloody and they're long. They don't have a guarantee of success, either in overcoming the thing that they're put up against or in replacing it with something good. It could be 1776, but it could easily also be the French Revolution. You're rolling dice on how well that goes. I think that's part of my issue, is that this really isn't 1776. The system is working the same way it was previously, and you're trying to use violence within the system. You're not saying we need to get rid of the system and replace it with a new one. You're saying, I don't like how the system is currently doing things. I'm going to use violence within it to try and influence the outcome. Again, that strikes me more as terrorism.
I also just don't like the idea of praising these people as if they were heroes or something like that, because, well, like you said, they're essentially being terrorists, and they're not responsibly exercising it. But as you also mentioned earlier, the end result is going to be the precise opposite of what they wanted. Gretchen Whitmer has already said there will be no more guns at protests. And we can yell and scream all day about how that shouldn't be. and Justin Amash brought this up. He brought this up on the Lions of Liberty podcast when he was still running for president. And it's why I still defend his words, because if you're acting like the way a lot of these protesters are acting, the ones protesting the lockdown by essentially threatening violence to their legislators, most people aren't going to like you. I mean, for crying out loud, you and I are both gun people and we don't like
right.
you. Think what people scared of guns are going to do. The popular sovereignty is going to be against you and is now going to be okay with restricting rights more. You're just being counterproductive to your cause.
Right. But it's us who get accused by our fellow Second Amendment people of really being anti-gun, because clearly that's the case. And that's another thing I have an issue with, because in this case, I think these people shouldn't do this. And I don't know if I said this on the episode yet, on the podcast yet, but in private conversation, I've said with you, the McMichaels are people who I don't think should own guns. I don't think that the McMichaels should own guns. Notice what I didn't say there. I didn't say the government should take them away. And I don't think that the government should stop the Michigan protesters from carrying guns during their protests. That doesn't mean I think they should do it. There's this pure libertarianism thing that goes on with libertarians and conservatives, where just because you think someone shouldn't do something, they then think that you're totally against liberty. Again, it's really not an anti-libertarian principle. To quote Bastiat, it's as if you think that just because we don't want the government involved in something, we don't want it done at all. I want people to make better decisions. That doesn't mean that I want the state to come in with its own violent means and force them to make better decisions. There's a huge difference between those two things. I think that people like the McMichaels should honestly self-reflect and decide that maybe they shouldn't own firearms because they don't understand how and when to use them. I think that the Michigan protesters should honestly reflect and think, am I accomplishing what I want to accomplish here? Is this morally sound? Am I in the right here? And then leave their guns at home.
And I think policing our own is one of the best ways to do that. You know, there's a lot of research out there, psychologically speaking, showing, from my interpretation, you know, you can have as many normative reforms as you want, and you can apply this to any arena. You can apply this to police brutality. You can apply this to the Second Amendment. You can apply this to free speech. Making it illegal isn't going to necessarily stop the behavior. Exhibits A through C, the war on drugs, and I could go on. Again, you have to think smart about how you exercise your rights. We've talked about this a lot with free speech. Yeah, I think that you have the right to be a hateful, racist piece of crap with your free speech. My research granddad, as it were, he was my advisor's advisor. It was Dan Gilbert. He's a social psychologist, I believe, at Harvard now. And he's talked about this at length. So has Jonathan Haidt. You know, engaging with ideas you find to be hateful is actually very healthy, because it makes you confront them. You don't dismiss them out of hand. You think about all the reasons you think they're wrong. Then at the end of the day, not only do you still think that they're wrong, but you can articulate why. But no one ever says you're no one, because unfortunately, yes, people have accused me of being anti-free speech. But generally, saying, nah, I don't think you should be part of the KKK. If you want to change someone's behavior, though, just saying the KKK is illegal isn't going to change anything. We saw that happen in history. The KKK was illegalized. It went nowhere. But policing our own as communities, as friend groups, you know, calling out your friend who makes a joke that you think is wildly inappropriate, that's going to actually change their behavior. Because just because they have the right to make that joke doesn't mean that you think they should. And I think widely as a culture, we still have a large way to go and a long way to go, but I think we are starting to realize this, just because you can say something doesn't mean you should, but just because you said something you shouldn't doesn't mean we should destroy you. You can change people by policing your own, but I think we need to apply that to things like the Second Amendment and say, okay, just because you can open carry doesn't mean you should, and here are all the practical reasons why. I still think you have the right to do this. I also think it's a really dumb idea to do, and it's just bad optics, and you're accomplishing the opposite of what you want to accomplish here.
Again, make these decisions for yourself, or someone else will find a way to make them for you, and that's on top of just the moral consideration of, is what you're doing right? There are right ways to use your freedoms and there are wrong ways to use them, even if the law isn't involved. There are plenty of things that are legal and are immoral. There are plenty of things that would be moral if, you know, under normal circumstances, it happened to be legal, and that's another problem. And both those sides, you can see where I have an issue with conservatives and where I have an issue with libertarians. Libertarians seem to fail to make the legal moral distinction in the sense that they think, well, if we just legalize something, it should be fine. And this thing should be legal, therefore it's fine. You know, classic example would be most of us libertarians are at least pro-legalized pornography. We don't think that censorship should be applied to stop people from consuming pornography. And a great many of us are pro-legalized sex work of all kinds, including prostitution. The problem is when libertarians go over a line and say, well, then those things are good because they should be legal. No, they're not. I want those things to be legal and for no one personally. I want those things to be legal and for no one to engage in them. The other side, of course, you've got the thing of, well, this thing is wrong, therefore it should be illegal. I've always had that issue with conservatives, and more recently I'm having the other issue with libertarians of both sides need to be able to distinguish between morality and legality. And this is just another example of that. This thing is perfectly legal. You still really shouldn't do it.
And again, I think there's also there's this idea, Lord Acton talked about it a lot. Having liberty is really meaningless if you don't exercise it correctly. And if you don't encourage other people to exercise it correctly. And again, this is where, and I keep bringing it up, but I think it's really important, and it's kind of the crux of what we're talking about here, is that idea of policing your own. Just because what people are doing is technically legal doesn't mean it's right. It is not illegal, let's just say, to cheat on your wife. Now, yes, you may be breaking contracts, and you're probably going to get taken for a lot of money in a divorce court, but let's say you have a good lawyer. And you can get out of cheating on your wife, you can get out of those divorce proceedings without any severe financial consequences. That doesn't make it right.
You probably will. Marital unfaithfulness isn't a factor in divorce cases, especially for finance distribution. It's just not. You don't need a good lawyer for that.
Really?
It hasn't been since like 1950 in states besides New York.
Well, I think I just felt my cynicism grow, but okay. Regardless, that just strengthens my point, right? It's not illegal. It's still wrong. When it comes to these societal debates, think about these people like your friends, like you're trying to persuade your friends. How would you try to persuade them? Would you menace them with firearms? Because if so, you're a crappy friend. You know, if you have an anti-Second Amendment friend, I sincerely hope you don't just consistently try to pull out your guns to annoy or scare them.
Yeah, don't have your Glock disassembled on the table every time they come over for drinks. That's a bad
move. It's also just remarkably immature and childish, and it's not good. It's not good citizenship. It's not virtuous. I'm sounding like Jason here, but there you go. It is not the virtuous exercise of liberty. So that's where I land on a lot of this. A lot of these issues dealing with firearms lately, dealing with the police use of them. There's got to be some policing our own. You got to think about, are you acting out of and because of your morals, your convictions, or are you acting out of things like stereotypes and group norms?
Or just group loyalty. I wouldn't even say group norms. Part of the problem with not policing our own is group loyalty that makes rationality and objectivity take a back seat.
I was just being a social psychologist and including that under the thing of group norms, but good catch. Good call. Okay. But yeah, and on the other hand, you know, are you engaging your cognitive system? Are you truly thinking about this and trying to be objective when it comes to these issues, or are you just spouting off? Are you acting in line with your principles? Because, and again, we all act out of line with our principles from time to time. But when it comes to all these relatively diverse issues we've discussed over these last couple of episodes, there are underlying connections between all of them, between our principles and acting in a thoughtful manner that I just don't see really being exhibited. Whether it's people who just automatically side with the McMichaels, whether it's people staying silent about Kenneth Walker being defended and deserving to be talked about with the wrongful death of his girlfriend, Breonna Taylor. You know, we aren't talking about that. We aren't talking about what leads to no-knock raids when we should be, because this was a tragedy. And then when we talk at length about, oh, you know, we, you know, those heroes in Kentucky and Mississippi and Michigan, wherever else they've done armed protests against lockdowns, but then we aren't talking about persons of color defending their representatives and thus their own rights with firearms. We don't talk about that. to me, you have to tie this all together with acting in a principled and thoughtful manner.
I will say just really quick for the record that with not talking about defending a legislator with firearms, that's on both sides. I think there's not defending it on the right because it was on the wrong side of the political issue where for some reason coronavirus has become a left-right issue. I missed how that happened, by the way. The Republican gun owners, the conservative gun owners, even the libertarian gun owners aren't going to be as big on that one because it was in service to a political cause that they oppose. Whereas on the left, you can be a minority and you can be right, but they are not going to talk about you if you used a gun to make the point. Even if you did it in what we would see as the right way, it's the wrong way to them just because there's a gun involved. So there's some both sides going on here. I think there's a lot of hypocrisy on both sides of these people did one thing or are one thing that makes them not fit perfectly into your in-group, and therefore they're not worth discussing. That has happened on both sides with that issue.
Well, yeah, and again, there's always some hypocrisy with this. And I think you're right. You know, like we see persons of color who are pro-gun getting called white supremacists. There was a really funny, in a very, very sick sense of humor way, a few months ago where an African-American wearing a Black Guns Matter shirt at a concert was called a white supremacist. And I'm like, I don't know how that calculus works. I'd be really curious because I do suck at calculus. So maybe you can show me something here.
Show me the math.
Yeah, but as far as my ability to work this out goes, when you're a white person calling a Black person a white supremacist because they're pro-gun, I'm not siding with you, buddy. Yeah, I just can't. Anyway, we've talked about a lot of issues. A lot of these things are going to still be developing. Obviously, the Ahmaud Arbery case is on its way to trial. We don't know yet what's going to happen with Breonna Taylor's and Kenneth Walker's case. We don't know what's going to continue to happen with the use of arms in political discussion, debate, and demonstration. But a lot of these things are going on. If you have any thoughts or feelings, feel free to reach out to us at Facebook.com/LibertySnark or contact@libertysnarkpodcast.net. We'll be back next week. Take care. Stay safe. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to the Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Snarkiness podcast. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a like or a share on social media or leaving us a review on the podcasting platform of your choice. You can reach us at our Facebook at Liberty Snark or visit our website at libertysnarkpodcast.com. Thank you guys so, so much for listening.